when we face our stuff, we no longer need to stuff our face. Wow, isn't that interesting? And that's so important, and we'll talk about why that's important here in a bit. But that magic diet, detox, flush, or pill that promises you a 10-pound weight loss in a week is tempting, isn't it? We know it won't last and wonder if it will work, and yet when you find yourself staring longingly into the refrigerator for comfort and stress relief, start a diet with good intentions but lose focus, reach your goal, and then yo-yo back or gain even more weight, it's not hunger that's driving you. So says our guest today, Renee Jones. She spent 40 years yo-yoing up and down the scale. So she learned every diet, every cheat, before finally stopping the self-sabotage and not only reaching but maintaining her goal weight. She has a master's degree in marriage and family counseling and a clinical residency in pastoral care. And she's opened a counseling and coaching practice in 2011. Renee, it's nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Do you know the answer to this trivia question? You know, I do addiction and have for over 30 years. What is the most common addictive behavior in the country today?
I'd say maybe alcohol or food.
Yeah, well, it's food. And since you're the food expert today, we're going to talk about food or overeating addiction and see how your book blends with my treatment for that addictive problem.
Okay.
Okay, so my first question to you is, how long, you said 40 years you've been faced with this problem?
Yes, my first diet was when I was 10 years old.
Okay. And why did...
And I reached my goal weight the week before my 50th birthday.
Great. Why did you diet when you were 10 years old?
Because I was too heavy. And, I guess my mother helped me figure this out, but I suddenly realized that all the skinny little girls were, you know, having a lot more fun and could do things that I could not, or just wasn't ready to. So I thought, okay, we're going to take a little bit of this weight off, get it done now, and then when I hit my teens, I'll be great.
And I think it didn't work.
No. Well, it worked for a while, like everyone else. You know, I would diet and I would lose however many pounds, and then something would happen and I'd get upset and I'd start eating, or we'd go for a family gathering and we always had lots of food at those. In fact, we used to call those 4-day weekends the 4-day food orgy, because we just ate and ate and ate. So it just went on forever.
Yeah. My definition of addiction is, if you have a behavior that you find to be hurting yourself or someone you love, and you can't stop it for whatever reason, then you're addicted to that behavior. Would you say that that fit your definition with respect to food?
Oh, absolutely. Because it's that moment when you are suddenly upset and you cannot stop yourself from going to the refrigerator or the pantry. This is just what you use to soothe yourself, and you for the life of you, you can't stop it.
Absolutely. Now, there's only one really good reason in my mind to eat, and that's when you're hungry and you need to eat to continue to live,
not to comfort
yourself when you're angry, when you're happy, when you've done a good deal at work, when you have a success in your relationship. None of those things are a good reason to eat, but, you know, all of us do that, don't we?
Well, we do, and actually, I think it's taught to us from birth, because when a baby cries, we tend to put something in their mouths, whether it be a pacifier or the breast or a bottle or even, you know, your finger, just sort of massage the gums when a baby cries. So we're taught from very early on that when something happens, we put something in our mouths.
Right.
And unfortunately, we go from a pacifier to a donut.
Yeah, they're both round, but the donut has the calories. At the beginning of your book, I was reading what a number of people have said, and this line, face your stuff, don't stuff your face. Explain to the audience what that really means.
Well, I think for me, I soothed myself with food because I didn't want to look at the other stuff going on around me. And once I actually faced it and started dealing with all of my emotional baggage, then I didn't need to stuff down my feelings and follow them with a food chaser. I could just work out the issues, or I just didn't feel so guilty anymore because I'd forgiven myself or others. Once you actually face your stuff, you just don't need to stuff your face anymore.
Yeah. Well, I found over years of working with people with addictive behaviors that regardless of what the behavior is, it all comes from low self-esteem. You don't feel good enough about yourself. You don't think that you're good enough to not do things that are harmful to you. Why would you want to harm yourself, whether it be with alcohol or with sex or with food? It's just not right to want to hurt yourself. But you don't value yourself enough to not do that.
Yeah. And we don't necessarily look at eating as something that is harmful to us. I mean, the media is constantly telling us, you know, go get a burger at this place. Go get an all-you-can-eat buffet over here. Go get this. Have, you know, a candy bar. You're not just not yourself when you haven't had your whatever candy bar. It's and all of our events revolve around food. So we are taught anything that's going on, it can't be food that's a problem. No, that's not it. But it does harm us. And we don't realize it until we are too heavy, and then we think, yeah, but it's so hard, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Or I've got so much to lose.
Absolutely. You know, I was listening to the news just today or yesterday, and they said our society is resetting their definition of what's normal.
Mm-hmm.
We're now believing that being overweight is normal, is the normal, because every time you look around, everybody's overweight, or at least a great percentage of them. I think probably better than 30% of the population could be in that category.
Oh, yes. 30% of the population currently is obese, and they're considering, there was a study in 2012, and they projected the rates will increase to 44% in 2030, and some states as high as 60% if they continue the trend that began in 1999. So, yes, I mean, they make the seats bigger, a little bit bigger on airplanes. They make clothes bigger. It has become what is normal for our country, and that's such a dangerous and unhealthy precedent to set.
Right. Well, I was reviewing your table of contents, and your chapter 4 is gluttony, the culture-approved sin.
Yes.
Talk to that for a second.
Well, I mean, anytime you go to, like, a grandparent's house or an older person's house, they want to feed you. You can get around that, can't you? Here, have some more. Have three desserts. It's fine. Let's go get donuts. We just, even the all-you-can-eat buffets, you know, they're expensive, but I've never been able to eat enough food to justify what the expense is, so I stopped going to them. We just push each other toward food. When we think about the Super Bowl or any professional sports games or even, you know, the local little league of whatever sort. There's always food there because we entertain ourselves with food. And we just think, oh, this is the thing to do. Let's just eat food. When you are planning a party, you think almost the first thing you think about is what are we going to eat? We just get so focused on it and just eating more and more and more. Yeah, you can do it. Come on. It'd be great.
Back in the day, before I learned what was necessary to learn about addiction and everything, I was addicted to food. And I remember going to buffets and eating what would be maybe 5,000 calories in one meal and then leaving there and feeling so bad, like an alcoholic after he'd sobered up, you know, feeling, why did I do that? And so it doesn't make any difference what it is. Let's talk about what is gluttony. It's the overconsumption of food, drink, or anything we can possess. It is considered one of the seven deadly sins in Christian culture, prohibited by Judaism, expanded beyond simple consumption on how it is consumed in Catholicism, considered a point of extravagance or waste in political circles, and Islam urges followers not to waste by excess. So, we're getting back to everybody believes that you should eat in moderation, but that's not what we do.
No, and even our plates have grown. I mean, when I was about 1990, I was 28 years old, and I couldn't foresee a date in the near future, and I thought, you know what, if I never get married, I'd still like to have nice things in my home. So I started collecting china. And for the first year or so, my family would give me a place setting at Christmas or my birthday or whatever. And the plate that I got then was like 9.5 inches. And when I finally did move toward getting married, which was 5 years later, all the plates were 10.5 inches. The plate had grown in a short period of time, and what they did was they added what we call a luncheon plate, and that's the smaller one, and then the dinner plate is 10.5 inches. We have allowed more space on our plates to accommodate us.
Yeah. Well, it's a known fact that if you eat off a smaller plate, you'll have fewer calories ingested by the end of the day. So,
indeed, yeah. Indeed.
What's the deal with a charger plate? Those are plates that are about 12 inches across.
They're just decorative. They're there to hold a space, to make the table look pretty before you come in with the plates you're going to eat from.
So, actually, nobody fills up a 12-inch plate.
Let's hope not. But they do have platters now that people tend to fill, and that's disturbing.
You said in Chapter 5, my year without peanut butter and other addictive cravings. Tell us about your addictive cravings.
Well, you know, everybody has something that they just can't put down. And peanut butter was my go-to food. I just couldn't, I mean, I'd eat it by the tablespoon rather than the teaspoon. And it was very connected. My grandmother had a love for peanut butter. My mother had a love for peanut butter. And when they died about 7 years apart, my response was to go to peanut butter in order to reconnect with my mother and my grandmother. Now, not consciously, but it just helped me feel soothed when I would have peanut butter. And I thought, this is not good, but I couldn't stop buying it. So I had an elderly dog who was so devoted to me. It was very sweet. But when he finally passed away, I had given him lots of pills and peanut butter, and I couldn't even look at the jar anymore because it was just, you know, pets have such a tender place in our hearts. So I just stopped buying peanut butter, and the other dog was rather disappointed because she already had connected with peanut butter, but I just couldn't do it. So I laid it aside because of that emotional reaction. And after I kind of grieved and got through that, I realized, you know, this is a danger zone for me. And I do still buy peanut butter now, but there are times when I just can't. I can't have it in the house because I won't leave it alone.
Yeah.
And those are the kinds of foods we have to take ourselves, you know, draw ourselves up and say, you know what, you're the adult. I don't know what is driving that, but you're the adult and you should not eat it. Or you should not keep it in the house. And what's fun is that there are places that will hold it for you and they'll keep it fresh for you, and all you have to do is go get it when you want it. And they even call it a store.
Yeah, a grocery store. You know, one thing I found is if you bring it home, sooner or later, you're going to eat it. So go to the grocery store, don't put it in your basket, and you won't have that problem.
That's right. That's right. Enjoy it where you find it, you know, in other ways, but don't bring it home.
Right. What are your strategies for navigating a party buffet or office kitchen party or things like that?
I find that it helps me if there's just a lot of food around to kind of wander around, do a reconnaissance walk, and kind of assess what's there. Because you know what happens, you think, ooh, that's pretty, ooh, I like that, ooh, that'll be fun. And by the time you get to the end of the line, you've got a very full plate. So I go through and I pick out the things that I think, oh, that's the thing I want, and I'll choose this, this, and this. But just sort of planning ahead, making sure that you get what you want, but not so much stuff, because we always feel like if it's on our plate, we have to eat it.
Right.
I also try to make sure before I go to a party that I'm not too hungry. You know, I'll have a snack or I'll have a large glass of water or something to kind of stave off that hunger. Because if you arrive at a party and you're starved, you're going to start eating things left, right, and center, and that's just not good for you. So just prepare ahead and then look. I also have rules because I go to various places with my work. And I have a bright line rule. I do not have food offered to me from vendors or colleagues. So, you know, a vendor brings in donuts. I do not eat donuts. That's just one of my rules. I don't take food offered to me at work.
Well, that sounds like a good rule to me. I have a rule at a buffet that I don't take more than a teaspoon or a tablespoon of anything.
That's good. Yeah.
That way I can taste a lot of stuff, but I'm not going to load up on the calories.
Mm. And if you take like a salad plate, a smaller plate, the smallest plate that you see, even a dessert plate, then you'll have less on your plate.
That's right. That's right. What is the number one reason, in your opinion, that diets fail?
Because we look at them as a temporary and short-term solution rather than as training. I mean, every diet will work for you because they all come down to a couple of basic ideas. And they will work while you're on them. And what I did when I finally lost my weight for the last time, I looked at it as training. It's like, okay, this works for me. This keeps me satisfied. This will make me feel good. This adds to my vigor, you know. These are the foods that work for my body. And every body is different. Diet is very individual, and you have to figure out what works for you. But look at any diet, whatever diet you choose, look at it as training. Pick up some recipes you like that work for you.
We're talking today with Renee Jones, and the book is called What's Really Eating You? Overcome the Triggers of Comfort Eating. And Renee, tell our listening audience how to get a copy of your book, please.
It's available on Amazon, Kindle, paperback, or hardback, if they prefer. You can have any bookstore order it, or you can go to, right now, you can go to whatsreallyeatingyou.com and get a special offer.
Oh, that's great. You were on a yo-yo diet, so to speak, for 40 years, and I know a lot of people out there are doing the same thing. It's not getting them anywhere, and my approach to dieting is that overeating food is hurting you. It's causing you to be heavier than you should, die faster than you should, and in the meantime not have as great a life. So why would you want to hurt yourself? And so I think of this as just another thing like alcohol, sex, relationships, any of the 30 different types of addictive behaviors. You need to understand that whether your behavior is food or is something else, it's all the same. All these things that we become addicted to are caused by the same problem. They can be treated by the same problem. And I hope that the people listening today will take the opportunities to go over to iTunes and download them and then get into their podcast section and search out my podcast, which is Freedom from Addiction, and subscribe to it for free and listen to all the programs, including this one, which you can hear on iTunes, and find out about all the different kinds of addictive problems. So that's what I would hope for you. And so today we're talking about what's really eating you. Renee Jones is our guest today. Renee, this was a really good book. I really enjoyed reading it. And,
well, thank you.
It does some practical things that I don't really get to in my treatment of overeating, but there are things that will actually work if you work them. And have you had a lot of feedback from people as a result of this book yet?
Well, it hasn't been out that long, but the people who have read it and contacted me were very complimentary. They're like, one lady said, this is like listening to you talk. I said, well, thank you. Please learn the lessons.
Yeah. Okay, so you can have all the knowledge in the world, and if you don't act on that knowledge, it doesn't do you really any good, does it? So
not any at all.
So you need to do what Renee tells you in her book, because that will make a difference. Do you have any secret to weight loss and managing your weight? Is there anything that's a secret that you could tell our audience?
I think a lot of it is paying attention, because we tend to eat when we're doing other things, or we'll eat very quickly and then feel that we haven't actually had it or haven't enjoyed it. I remember hearing Oprah talk once about being in France, and she ordered 2 croissants because she knew she would eat the first one really fast, and she needed one to sit down and enjoy. And I thought, okay, that's twisted, and I've done the same thing. If we stop and focus on the food that we're eating and taste it and enjoy, squeeze all the flavor out of it, we tend to eat slower, and we tend to enjoy it more, and we know that we've eaten something rather than, you know, just swallowing it whole. But one of the things that I tell my clients is, okay, if you're going to eat something that's not really in your plan, that's okay. But when you do, I want you to sit down at your table. I want to lay a place setting. I want you to turn off the TV, and I want you to focus on that bite as you take each one, because if you're going to give it emotionally that much power and respect, then you need to give it that kind of respect otherwise. Don't just eat it over the sink or in the pantry and swallow it hoping no one catches you. Give it the same respect that you're giving it emotionally and enjoy it. It's okay to go off your plan once in a while, as long as you actually take the time to enjoy it.
When you were talking about that, it kind of reminded me of an alcoholic who sneaks around and tries to get a few ounces of liquor down before anybody in the family knows that he's drinking. And You know, it doesn't really make any difference what your addictive behavior is. There's guilt and shame associated with it, generally speaking, and you're trying to not let other people see the real you, and that's part of the problem, too, is hiding it.
Yeah. Well, and the problem, the only problem with food is, you know, as opposed to many of the other addictions, is that you have to have it. You can't live without it. With alcohol, you can, even though you don't want to, you can live without it. With cigarettes, you can live without them. With sex, you can live without it. It's not essential to life. But with food, you have to take in at least some calories every day, unless you're on some kind of fast, in order to survive.
Yeah, that is a problem, isn't it?
Yes.
But we don't have to take in twice as many. I know that when I'm just eating and not writing it down all day long, I can probably eat twice as much. Maybe because my memory is not that good. Maybe because I didn't really think about how many calories was this particular food or whatever. But it helps me a great deal to have a calorie or food diary so that I know what I actually ate.
Yes. And sometimes, you know, life happens and I'll think I'm doing well, and then all of a sudden I've gained a couple of pounds, or my skirts are a little tight, or my trousers are a little tight, and I'm thinking, oh dear, what have I done now? So I go back to my food journal and write down what I'm eating for a couple of days, and that usually reveals, oh, you know, I wasn't weighing this, or I was just eyeballing that, and maybe I need to reacquaint myself with what a serving looks like. Because we don't pay a whole lot of attention to servings.
Absolutely. I could sit down with a jar of peanut butter and eat several tablespoonfuls of the stuff before I cut myself off. But in that period of time, I may have eaten 500, 600 calories. It's amazing what you can eat and not realize what the implications of what it's costing you in calories going in.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
So.
And sometimes we're not actually hungry, we just want to eat.
Yeah.
And that's not appropriate either. We do it, but that's not the adult in us doing that. That's the child who wants a snack.
Right. What do you think about having snacks in the house?
Well, I think if it works with your plan, it's fine. I mean, I would be careful about what those snacks are. You know, I don't keep Twinkies and chocolate and stuff in the house. If I want it, I go out and get it. But I think you need to have healthy snacks as alternatives, because sometimes what you had for lunch or dinner didn't quite do it. And that's just a variation in our bodies, as, you know, depending on our exercise and all the rest of it. We need to be prepared for that. But as a rule, I would say snacks are easy ways to get in trouble.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? What do you think is more effective, dieting or taking less calories in, or trying to burn them off with exercise?
Oh, no doubt. Losing weight is 80% nutrition and 20% everything else. The exercise and all the rest of it is great. It does wonderful things for you, but it always comes down to nutrition.
Mm-hmm. I remember some years ago when I was writing one of my books on addiction that I was talking about this particular problem, and I got the information somewhere that one nice slice of apple pie with a little bit of ice cream on it would take you 11 hours of walking on level ground to work it off.
Yes.
So what,
you know, I use one of those Fitbits.
Yes.
And it annoys me how few calories I burn when I'm doing my 5-mile walk in the morning. It's like, is that all? Surely I burned more than that, but it's just not true.
Yeah, that's right. So the thing is, if you're a logical being, you're going to say, well, should I have a piece of pie, or should I go out and walk for 11 hours? And there's really one answer to that question, you know. I mean, it doesn't make sense to eat the pie, does it?
Yes, but so often, the logical, food has nothing to do with logic.
In many cases, that's true.
It seems that men have an easier time doing the logical food thing, and some women, but just as many people are like, yeah, but my grandmother used to make that, and it was so wonderful, and off we go.
Well, you know, what Granny used to make and used to serve up as meals and everything, for some reason, didn't really cause as much obesity as now when Granny is not cooking. So you have to wonder about that, because she was cooking up potatoes and meat and things that, you know, have the calories in them, but our population just wasn't as heavy back in Granny's day.
Well, there are a couple of things that I would say about that. One is that we had much greater portion control then. You know, it's only been in the last, maybe 30 years that our portions have gone crazy. Bigger plates, bigger portions. I mean, you go out to any restaurant, if you eat all of the food on that plate, that's a lot. Most of the time, I can divide a restaurant meal up into at least two and sometimes three meals. The other thing is that, you know, my first diet was rather low in carbohydrates, because it was before the low-fat thing kicked off. And when in the early 80s, after the food pyramid and the low-fat philosophy became so pervasive, we did more of a low-carbohydrate diet. I remember talking to my grandmother, and she said, you know, you need a little fat because you're going to not do well. And I said, but man, it's supposed to be low-fat. That fat is what makes you fat. But all of the diets that I was on before that were, you know, pretty much low-carbohydrate, somewhat low in fat. But it just, it changed how we think about it. And in fact, even today, if I say to a client, you know, you might think about, you know, moderate fat, adding that back into your diet, and they're like, but it's all supposed to be about low fat this and everything. And I think what we did was we threw the baby out with the bathwater, and we lost what makes us, what brings satiety. I know that I have a much easier time. I lost my weight on low fat, but I have maintained it on a fairly high fat diet because I figured out that my body needed more of that. And once I went to that, my weight kind of stabilized, and I had no problems, you know, being hungry anymore. So I think the diet in general in this country changed, and what we put in our bodies, making, you know, burger joints on every corner and donuts so available and everything else, I think that changed how we think, as well as how we eat, and therefore how we grew.
Many years ago, I was going to interview for my radio show Dr. Atkins. And so in preparation for that, I went on his diet, which is a low-carb diet. And if you're eating 16 grams of carbs per day or less, sooner or later you're going to go into ketosis, which is a metabolic condition. And when you're in ketosis, you don't have any hunger. So you don't eat a whole bunch. In 30 days, I lost 26 pounds. And I was so happy and ready to interview him. And then he slipped in a snowstorm in New York City, hit his head, and died before I could talk to him. And that was really horrible for me. But at any rate, I can I can identify with what you're talking about because I ate a lot of fat on that diet, but I just didn't eat carbohydrates. And if you are holding back on your carbohydrates, you're probably also going to get a better deal with your sugar. And so I think that's good for diabetics. But at any rate, we're talking about nuances of dieting and everything like that. And the bottom line is whether you're an overeater, a drinker, a gambler, a sexaholic, or whatever, you got low self-esteem, you need to understand certain spiritual principles that's going to increase your self-esteem so that you value yourself enough to be able to do things like read your book and apply the stuff and be able to feel good about it. So I would tell you that What's Really Eating You is a great book. It's got a lot of great stuff in it. You ought to get a copy of it and use it to help you, but you also need to balance that by what is really eating you and how to take care of that problem, too. This program, which airs on iTunes under Freedom from Addiction, originally started out as Share Your Mission. And I believe that each one of us has a purpose, a mission, and that if we figure out what it is and then act on it, that we're going to have a totally different and better life. So let me ask you, Renee, do you have a mission?
Yes.
Tell us.
I believe my mission is to help people heal their hearts. Because once they heal their hearts, everything else kind of works out.
That's right. And you do it, of course, by writing books and public speaking, I guess, and other
counseling and coaching, yeah.
Coaching people and everything. Well, that's really, really a great mission. And as long as that's what you wake up wanting to do every day, you are a very successful person because not everybody gets to wake up and do what they really feel passionate about doing, and I'm glad for you.
Thank you. Me too.
Okay, well, that's about the end of the time for today, and our guest was Renee Jones. Her book is What's Really Eating You, and Overcome the Triggers of Comfort Eating. And go get a copy of that because it'll be well worth your time. Renee, thanks so much for being on the program today. I've really enjoyed talking to you about eating.
Yes, thank you for having me. It was fun.